Welcome to another Victory Girls podcast. My name is Deanna Fisher, and I'm talking today with one of our founding editors and our new managing editor, Cassie Fiano. And today's subject is kind of close to both of our hearts, as we are both special needs moms. This month, October, is Down Syndrome Awareness Month, and Cassie's story is talking about her care and her story and her journey with her son, Wyatt. And Cassie, why don't you say hi and start filling in some of the details for those who may not be totally aware of what your life and your story is like.
Well, hello, everyone, again. Wyatt is our second son, and we received a prenatal diagnosis with him. It started when I got the nuchal translucency screening, which is a combined blood test, and they measure the thickness of the back of the baby's neck. His was on the high end of normal, but it increased my odds of having a baby with Down syndrome, so we went ahead and got the amniocentesis done, and we decided to do it, and the actual procedure was 2 days after my husband had deployed to Afghanistan. So that was tough, because I was, you know, alone. And then 3 days later, we got the results and they were positive. So we knew that Wyatt had Down syndrome. And that's one thing that I think people get confused by, is they confuse diagnostic tests with screen tests. A lot of times people will hear that they got a positive for a nuchal translucency screening or the quad screen or, you know, whatever. And so they think, you know, that it actually means positive. It doesn't. Whereas an amnio is an actual diagnostic test. If it's positive, that's 100%. Right. So we had to go through that, and Matt was really okay with it pretty much right from the beginning. He called that night, and I told him, you know, that it had come back positive, and he goes, okay. I'm like, how can you just say okay? Like, my whole world had been turned upside down, and he was just like, all right, whatever. And, you know, I spent the next few days crying and upset, and it took a while for me to accept it, whereas, you know, my husband, it was just no big deal.
At what point during the pregnancy did you have the confirmation?
It was about 15 or 16 weeks. Okay. I can't remember exactly when.
So still within the first half of the pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and right now there seems to be a really large push, even in Down Syndrome Awareness Month. We were just talking off air about a couple of stories that we've both read recently about mothers, quote unquote, who have said, oh, if only I'd known, I would have aborted my disabled child. And both of us are equally horrified about that implication. Why don't you talk a little bit about how people have said things to you? I know that we've talked about this a little bit before, about how people have perceived Wyatt, but also during your pregnancy, when they found out, what were people saying?
During my pregnancy, for the most part, people acted like I was some sort of like hero figure, which I guess if you consider the high number of women who do have abortions after getting a prenatal diagnosis, I kind of get it. But at the same time, to me, it was just, there was never any other option. Like, as upsetting as it was to get the diagnosis, I never thought about having an abortion ever. It never even crossed my mind. It was, you know, okay, well, this is just a new reality I'm going to have to come to grips with. And people acted like I was doing this extraordinary thing, like it was just amazing and so inspiring. And it just, I mean, I guess it's kind of an ego boost, but then at the same time, it's like, he's just a baby. You know, it's not an extraordinary thing to be raising my baby,
right?
Which I wish more people would take that kind of attitude, because I mean, first and foremost, when you have a new baby that has Down syndrome or any other disability, they're still just a baby. They just need to be taken care of and fed and loved, and that's all. You know, it's not, you're not giving birth to like an octopus now or something. I mean, it's not some crazy thing. It's just, I was pregnant. I'm still pregnant. I'm still going to have a baby.
Right. Well, and one thing you did point out is that more Down's kids are born with additional health issues. Many of them need heart surgery or monitoring or some kind of testing for additional issues on top of that. Do you think that when people think of a Down's diagnosis, do they get overwhelmed by what it means for them immediately or what it means for them in the future and not raising a typical child?
I think it's probably a little bit of both because, for one thing, it'll depend on the person. You know, for me, I didn't really think about immediate health problems so much as I did stuff down the road, like people with Down syndrome are higher, well, children with Down syndrome are higher risk for getting leukemia. So, yeah, that was something that I was aware of and had thought of. One of my childhood friends actually passed away from leukemia, so it was something that is a little scary for me to think about. And so I thought about that, and is he going to be able to work when he gets older? Is he going to have friends? Is he going to be bullied? That's the stuff that I worried about. Mm-hmm. I would sit there and think, you know, oh, he's never going to have any friends. He's going to be, you know, like this special kid in class, and everyone's going to ignore him and make fun of him, which, you know, I think I got over that in about a month. And now that he's here, it's, you know, other kids really don't notice anything, you know, different about him.
It's amazing what kids do and don't notice. They'll ask one question and then it'd be like, oh, whatever, that's just them. And kids are much more accepting about this. Speaking of which, if you happen to hear noise that isn't an adult talking, the odds are good because both Cassie and I have small children. That is one or the other of our kids in talking, having fun, playing at our feet, because that's what our life is like. So just a disclaimer on what are those noises, and also a disclaimer on me, I'm getting over a cold. So I sound a little odd these days, but I'm getting over it, and it's not Ebola, so we'll all be happy about that. so I guess, and I think that's typical for a lot of special needs parents, is that we sit around, for those who don't know, my oldest son, James, who is now 9, is on the autism spectrum. He's considered moderate, so he is verbal. He doesn't have a lot of stereotypical behaviors that you would associate with being on the spectrum. But I think we went through a lot of the same things. Obviously, with autism, there isn't an automatic when you're born, you know. That's one of the biggest mysteries about it. We've actually opted for genetic testing, and it didn't turn up anything. So that really kind of didn't help us any, but at least it told us that we didn't have an ongoing genetic issue that could be explained by what's known right now. And I went through that same thing of, you know, and I still do. How is he going to be an independent adult? And my goal in life is to make him as independent as possible. But also, will he have friends? That everybody in the school knows who he is. It's kind of funny because he has such a terrible time remembering people's names, and everybody will say, "Hi, James," and just be talking to him. He's like, "Hey, you," because he can't remember anybody's name. But that's just how he is, and he's just a unique character, and the kids think he's hysterical, and he likes people. So that's another thing that's not typical about him. He actually likes being around people. So yeah, I think we all go through that. And I guess for parents on the autism spectrum, it's a different ballgame. We do not have a physical disability that's readily available to see. And we were talking a little bit about this, about how some, you know, there's a martyrdom within the special needs parents of, well, my kid's worse off than yours. You know, there's a one-upmanship going on that's never pretty. And yeah, and it's just generally unpleasant when we all should be focused on getting the best help and the best services for our kids that we can, that's available to us. So, yeah. So some things are universal to all special needs parents, and sometimes, you know, obviously different kids, different disabilities have different medical issues, and some have different psychological issues. So it will go back and forth. So how is Wyatt doing right now? I love watching, you know, the little videos that you have of him learning to walk. It's so exciting just to see him. He's got such joy when he takes those steps too. Everybody's just cheering him on.
He's always so proud and excited whenever he walks. He's just like, he'll stand there and he'll clap and he gets so excited. We've been really lucky that Wyatt hasn't had any major health issues. He had a couple of minor heart defects when he was born, But those luckily went away on their own. He didn't need surgery or medication or anything. He just got monitored by cardiology for a few months, and then that was that. Which is, you know, really fortunate. A lot of parents that I know that have children with Down syndrome have had to have, you know, open heart surgeries, or, you know, their children have had infantile seizures or had to have feeding tubes or any number of things. And their kids are all, you know, healthy for the most part and okay. It's scary to have to go through those things. But the nice thing is that most children with Down syndrome are, you know, they come through these surgeries fine.
Mm-hmm. Do you think parents just get overwhelmed by, because we do, we hear about the astounding abortion rate of kids that are diagnosed with Down, or even have the potential to be diagnosed, the screening versus the actual diagnosis. We hear about the abortion rates of these kids, and what, there's such a stigma against having an imperfect child, first of all, but then is there just, and this is why these awareness months exist, is there just a real lack of awareness about what these kids are capable of and what they can bring into life?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, right now being Down Syndrome Awareness Month, it's nice that it is, but it almost feels to me like it's kind of an echo chamber in the Down syndrome community, because people that are not involved with Down syndrome, I don't think most of them have any idea that it's Down syndrome awareness month. You know, whereas if you compare that to autism awareness month, everyone knows about that.
Oh yeah, because everybody's selling something blue for Autism Speaks. It's like, we should all wear blue. Make sure you have blue this. Make sure you have blue that. And it's like, yeah, blue and puzzle pieces, that's all you see. And somehow buying that will make you aware. And yeah. Not really, no.
And it's kind of a shame. And I also feel like October was like, I don't know who picked this and
yeah,
who came first, but October is like the worst possible month, because it's also Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And apparently they even call it Pinktober now.
Oh yeah, so, that's the new thing on social media, isn't it?
It's like, we can't compete with that, you know, but,
who decides these things?
Honestly, I don't know.
Who picked April for Autism Awareness Month? Nobody is thinking about autism in April specifically. I don't know why that got picked. Maybe they both start with the letter A. I don't know.
World Down Syndrome Day is March 21st for 321, Trisomy 21, three copies. Okay. So I get that.
Right.
But I don't know why they picked October. I don't know. But, you know, there is an astounding lack of awareness about Down syndrome and what they're able to do now. It's really a shame, because there have been so many advances in the past 30 years that have enabled people with Down syndrome to accomplish things that they never could before. You know, you've got Tim Harris that owns a restaurant. You know, they're able to work now and graduate from college. There was a teenager, I think it was Tennessee, that was inducted into his high school's National Honor Society. I wasn't a National Honor Society, and, you know, this teenager with Down syndrome was able to climb Mount Everest with his dad. I couldn't climb Mount Everest, you know?
You'd probably never dreamed of it either, though.
No. But the point is that they're able to do these things. And, you know, one other thing that a lot of people probably don't realize is that the average IQ of a person with Down syndrome has actually risen 20 points. So We're only just kind of breaking the ice of what they're able to do, of what their potential is. And that's just because of, you know, medical advancements. Not only that, but, you know, advancements in the therapies that they get with early interventions. So it just really leads you to wonder, okay, well, what is it going to be like 20 years from now? When Wyatt's adult? You know, it's going to be even better for him than it is now. But people don't know that. They think of things as if it's still the same 30 years ago. And I can only guess that's because when they were kids, they look at how children with Down syndrome were then, and they haven't matured with the times. Because people think of it and they think, oh, well, they're going to be housebound forever and they're never going to have a future, never going to have a meaningful life.
They're going to be institutionalized, you know, that locked away, you know, and I think that's where a lot of people fail. It's because they haven't kept up with the times. But unless it's in your face, unless you are confronted with it, then it's easy to forget. It's kind of like how many people that we met along the way early in our autism diagnosis, they didn't know anybody with autism. Now everybody and their brother thinks they know somebody with autism, and so therefore they're an expert. But I think that part of what's happened, especially with the Downs kids, is that you've got a lot of them just not being born. And the fewer number that you have, the easier it is to push away. And to
that's actually an interesting thing that you point up is that in the past, I don't know, 10 or 20 years, the average age of women having children has risen, you know, because women are having children later.
Right.
There have actually been studies done that have found that the number of babies born with Down syndrome should be significantly higher than what it is.
Right.
It should have risen around 30%, and instead it's dropped 15%.
And that's all prenatal screening.
Because people are having abortions.
Yeah. So how powerful was it for you when Sarah Palin walked onto the screen holding Trick?
It wasn't.
It wasn't?
No, I didn't have Wyatt at the time.
That's true.
So Down syndrome wasn't even on my radar. I mean, I think that it was like, oh, well, that's nice. Okay. And I never really thought anything about it.
Right.
But I remember after that, this actually was kind of funny. After I got the diagnosis and I kind of went public with it, a lot of people were like, oh, you should get in touch with Sarah Palin. And I'm like,
yeah, because we're best buds.
Let me just go give her a call.
Yes, I've got her phone number on speed dial.
You know, it's like, yeah, I'd love to talk to Sarah Palin, but I don't think she has the time. But it's nice to have someone who's so public and open about their child with Down syndrome, but the problem is that it's Sarah Palin, which I love Sarah Palin, she's very controversial.
Right. She's polarizing. And even within the special needs community, people get polarized along the lines of politics. So you get probably a lot of people saying yes and a lot of people saying, but it's her. So, there's definitely that as well. I can see that. So what do you think is the future of how America continues to see, first, abortion? Because it's amazing how increasingly pro-life people are becoming. In every poll, you see the increase in pro-life numbers. It's slow, but it's happening. And I think one of the reasons it's happening is because science is really influencing how people are seeing conception and fetal development and life. When science opens that window, it's no longer this nebulous proto-human thing. It's now a real-life human being in development. And the idea of potential human, if you leave it alone, it becomes a human being. It can't develop into anything else. So I think science is really starting to turn, at least in the area of anything past 20 weeks, it's really starting to turn the abortion argument on its head. And then what do you see going forward for kids with Down's diagnosis? Do you think you're going to continue to see the high rate of terminations, or are we going to, is awareness actually going to help?
Awareness actually would help a lot, because one thing that people, when they hear about the high rate of babies with Down syndrome being aborted, you know, they immediately blame the mother, which I understand. But what a lot of people don't realize is how very pressured so many women are to have an abortion. Mm-hmm. And this isn't just my opinion. This is an actual honest-to-God fact. The latest study showed that for every one woman who had a positive experience with her doctor, meaning that they didn't tell her, oh, your baby has Down syndrome, they're never going to walk.
Right.
Which is not even remotely true. Anyways, a woman that doesn't have an experience like that, for every one of her, there's 2.5 women, you know, that have a negative one, where their doctors are telling them to have an abortion, saying your child will never do anything with their life. They're never going to be able to walk. They'll never talk. They'll be completely dependent on you.
Right.
They don't have any future. They don't have any potential. This child is going to suffer.
Right.
Telling them all of the worst case scenarios, the absolute not true things, mm-hmm. and really pushing them to have an abortion, not just saying, oh, would you like to? Actually pushing abortion on them.
Right.
As they're meanwhile filling their heads with these horrible things that are not true.
Right.
So that's something a lot of people don't realize. It's a big problem in the medical community. And there are states that are actually passing laws now to change that require doctors to now give up-to-date, accurate medical information, which is a big deal, because saying to a woman, your baby with Down syndrome will never walk, is flat out false. Mm-hmm. But people get told that. You know, they say your baby's never going to walk. They're never going to talk. It's not even remotely true, but they still get told that. So these laws make it illegal for doctors to say things like that. It mm-hmm. requires them to use up-to-date, accurate medical information. And it also requires them to be put in touch with the first call program.
Okay.
They don't have to call them, but they have to be given the information. And what that does is they would go to first call and it would match them with the family in their area of a child with Down syndrome so they could meet them and talk to parents if they chose. And then from there, they could choose if they wanted to have an abortion or not. I would never agree with that anyways, but if they still did, at the very least, you could say, okay, well, they're doing it based on accurate information, not because they're going to be told, oh, well, you know, my child is going to be a deaf cripple that's going to have a horrible life filled with suffering and, you know.
Right. We keep being told information is power when it comes to, you know, anything, especially anything related to medicine and science. And yet the prevailing wisdom, especially in the medical community, as you've been saying, has been scare them into aborting these children. Because, and I get the feeling that we, well, it's a couple of things, that we're so obsessed with having perfect children. We really are. We want them healthy. We want them perfect. And, you know, the whole idea of the designer baby still hasn't, you know, totally gone away. We still have that far off dream of being able to tinker with genetics and being able to tweak out the things that we don't like and then start tweaking with the things that we prefer. And I believe we've tried eugenics once or twice and it's never quite turned out the way that it's supposed to. Mostly because eugenics doesn't really work the way it's supposed to because, human. We're all still very human. And it's amazing how things don't always line up to, you know, create your superhuman Aryan race. And I think one of the other issues that is ongoing with the scare tactics is that eventually people do realize that they're being fed a line, but in the meantime, so many other children have disappeared. And I know we've heard other stories about how, I believe there was a story recently of a couple that was saying, you know, we will abort our Down's child unless somebody adopts it. And
yes,
that was a huge story because there were people volunteering up the, and then of course, then the left was like, that was such a stunt.
There are actually wait lists
yeah.
to adopt babies with Down syndrome. Like there are waiting lists. There are so many people that want to have children with Down syndrome. It's astonishing. You've got all of these people that are aborting them left and right. 9 out of 10 women, you have a prenatal diagnosis, not 9 out of 10 overall. That's mm-hmm. kind of the mistake that people get. 9 out of 10 with a prenatal diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I think the overall number is like 6 out of 10.
Right.
9 out of 10 women with a prenatal diagnosis have an abortion, and meanwhile, there are waiting lists to get a child with Down syndrome.
Well, let's not even talk about the waiting lists just to adopt, period, because those are insanely long as well of people that either would adopt anybody or, you know, willing to, you know, adopt or on waiting lists. And you think about the waiting lists for people to adopt out of China, and yet those many of those are medical adoptions where the Chinese government has deemed them unfit for being adopted or living in China. And so they are put on the market that much faster for Americans to adopt. And then they come over here and they have whatever surgery. We have friends who adopted a little girl from China and who was a cleft palate surgery. And she had an initial repair done in China and then a secondary repair done here. And we'll need more as she grows because of the way that the scar tissue heals and all of that. But because she was considered a medical need, that adoption gets processed faster because China wants them gone. They don't want them there. And there are so many Chinese parents that simply abandon any deformed child because that isn't what the ideal is. The ideal is you have one child and that child is perfect and hopefully that child is male. And let's not even get into sex selective abortions because that'll be a whole nother podcast for another day.
Well, that's actually not even just a Chinese problem
yeah.
either.
Oh, no.
It's a big problem in like Eastern Europe, mm-hmm. Russia, Ukraine, Romania, places like that. And
India.
These children, yeah, these children get put into orphanages where they're pretty much stuck in a crib and neglected.
Right.
You know, Reese's
right.
Rainbow, it's an adoption advocacy program. They do adoption grants for international adoptions for kids with special needs. And I've interviewed the founder, Andrea mm-hmm. Ferris Roberts, and she's talked about, you know, children that they get that come back. They're like 9, 10 years old and they're still wearing baby onesies. Because they're so malnourished and starved. And the really horrifying thing is if they don't get adopted, they get aged out.
Right.
When they're like 5 or 6 into adult institutions, they're not given proper medical care. I mean, if these children don't get adopted, they will die.
Mm-hmm.
And until they do, they live these horrible lives filled with just neglect and suffering because things that would be relatively easy to fix here. Like Wyatt's, one of his heart defects was a PDA, which is where the ductus arteriosus does not close
mm-hmm.
when like it's supposed to. It's not even open heart surgery. If he would have had to have it fixed, they just insert a catheter
right.
and fix it. Bam, easy. But if it's not fixed, it can lead to problems. So you take something that's incredibly minor like that, and it just gets ignored for years
right.
until it becomes a big problem. And even then, they still don't give them the health care that they need. So... And there's people that want to do it. There's people that do it, that
right.
do adopt these children. And, you know, it's a shame because...
I know you've even said, hey, I'd take in another...
Oh, yeah.
...in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I just have to convince my husband.
3's not enough. We need more. So, yeah, that wasn't the conversation my husband and I had. Mine was, yeah, the stick is blue for number 4. So... So that wasn't a conversation. It was a, oh, we're already there.
It's just a shame because, you know, so many women have these abortions and I wonder how much of a difference it would make, you know, that knowing that there's all these people out there that would want to adopt their child.
Right.
But then at the same time, you know,
well, and I really think that
like
was the
life is not worth living. Then they're not.
And
yeah.
I think in that particular story about the adoption, about the people said we will abort unless somebody is willing to adopt, and then all of these people lined up to adopt, I really think that shocked the left because their whole mantra is that we only care about a child while it's in the womb, and then afterwards, whatever, you know, it's somebody else's problem. And so to have such a stark no, there's an entire list of people who would be willing to adopt this child if this child could just get born, but that's on the biological mother to actually get the child to that point. And then after that, if she's serious, the idea, everybody was lined up. Like, please let us adopt your child. We'll take him.
And adoption has changed so much too. Now,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Know?
Yeah.
So many different, like there are adoptions that you can do now where you can still be involved in the baby's life. And
yes.
the adoptive parents are willing to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So even then it's like even better, you know, the baby is going to have this great family, both his biological parents and his adoptive parents. It's not like it was 50 years ago, but that's how the abortion advocates want to paint it.
Right. Well, and so many things have changed. You know, you talk about the open adoption availabilities and just so much has changed over the last 50 years. And it seems like the feminists of the 70s still want to wave coat hangers and say, it's either this, it's either what we want or it's this. And it's such a false argument because science has changed. Medical care has changed. Our understanding of medicine has changed. Our understanding of fetal development has changed. And yet those old school feminists still want to wave a coat hanger acting like this is how it will be if you don't go along with us, when the reality is, yeah, most modern society has gone along with them and we still get a Kermit Gosnell. So,
well, he certainly wasn't alone either.
No, and he wasn't alone, and it's just he was the one that just managed to capture enough of, you know, what attention could be given, and even then it was like dragging people in. I will never forget some of the coverage of his trial where the section set aside for the media, there's one reporter and he's taking pictures of all those empty seats because no one wants to pay attention to this. No one wants to put it on the front page that, you know, here you had a abortionist who was preying on these vulnerable minority women. One of them dies. Let's not even talk about all the countless babies. And it's a local crime story because we can't say anything bad about the abortion lobby. We can't, even when it's horrible, even when it's, you look at the recent news out of Texas with their abortion laws being confirmed by the circuit court, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals down there, saying, yeah, all of your laws, sorry, guys, these are appropriate laws to have, where if you are going to perform an abortion, you have to have admitting privileges at a hospital. This has to be in a place with surgical care standards. And the idea that you would want to have an abortion somewhere where there weren't surgical care standards or somebody without admitting privileges if something went wrong is insane. And that just tells you where it's not about women's care. It's about just killing babies.
Well, and one thing too, just to, you know, kind of bring it back to the whole Down syndrome awareness thing is that,
oh, that's what we were talking about, right?
Well, in England, you know, in the United Kingdom, abortion is legal, but only up until, I think, 20 weeks.
Right.
And then after that,
as well,
you can't have any abortions anymore unless your baby is seriously deformed, which includes Down syndrome and club feet and disabilities. So if you have a disabled baby, you know, then, oh yeah, you're 40 weeks pregnant, decided you don't want to deal with it, go right ahead. Have your partial birth abortion.
Right.
It's totally fine to abort them up until the day before you give birth, as long as they're disabled.
Yeah. Well, I always love how we're told that we're not as progressive as Western Europe, and Western Europe puts a cap at 20 weeks for abortion.
Unless they're disabled.
Unless they're disabled. But even with the, you know, but that's never the argument here. The argument is that we should just be able to do it whenever. And my concern as we continue to go forward is right now in the Netherlands, they're talking about just the euthanasia rate has gone up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to see the euthanasia of people who have, you know, they're opting to commit suicide. They're depressed. And so you're starting to see people with mental illnesses opting to be euthanized. But you're also starting to see this movement of euthanize the disabled. And that is the next big thing. And it's, do these people not read history? Do we not?
Oh, it already is happening in Belgium.
It's already happening in Belgium. And it's going to start probably happening in the Netherlands if it hasn't already. The idea that these people don't have a life worth living. Let's just kill them.
A pair of twins, brothers, found out that they were going to go blind.
Right.
And so they
opted to commit suicide.
They were otherwise healthy, but
yeah. And I think that's the culture that we have right now, especially in the Western world, is if you are not perfect and if your faculties are not perfect and your child is not perfect, then let's just kill it. And where did we get to this point? I know where we got to this point, but I'm asking rhetorically. We've gotten to this point that if things aren't perfect, we have to get rid of it or kill it. And that's so desperately sad. It so speaks to where the morality of the Western world has fallen. And yeah.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, it's like, you know, 50 years ago, babies with Down syndrome were thrown into institutions and, you know, we're not given proper health care or therapy or anything. So now it's like, the medical care has advanced and therapy has advanced and what they're able to do has advanced. But then at the same time, we're aborting more of them than ever. So it's kind of like a,
yeah,
just how does that happen? How does that work? We've come so far on one hand, but on the other hand, there's still so very, very, very far to go. And I mean, that's part of those things where it's like, it's Down Syndrome Awareness Month, but you know,
so
I don't
see
a whole lot of awareness being, you know, spread around.
Well, here's your chance. Here's your chance. Let's try and bring this all together. So here's your chance to really impress on people who don't know, people who don't have a family member. You know, in our family, one of my husband's cousins, her now 20-year-old son has Down syndrome, and he's in job training right now, and he's a fabulous kid. He's the most hysterical kid I've ever met, most dry wit. He's so funny. But here, you know, but unless you have a family member or you know somebody, it's kind of, you feel very nebulous about it. So here's your chance to spread awareness. If you could talk to people and tell them about Wyatt and about your experiences in 90 seconds or less, how would you describe your life and why they should be aware?
Well, I mean, I think that the number one thing that people need to remember about people with Down syndrome is that they're still just people. I mean, that's really all it is. They're just people. It's kind of scary to think about. I mean, especially like in my situation growing up, I never even knew someone with Down syndrome. I'd never met someone with Down syndrome. I might have seen one somewhere, sometime, I don't know. But I mean, I think a lot of people probably grew up with that same kind of childhood because back then we didn't have inclusion of children with disabilities in our schools. They were put in their special schools or their special classrooms. So they never had the opportunity to be around people like Wyatt. And they're just people, you know? He likes Frozen like every other toddler does out there. I mean, it takes them a little longer to learn to do things, but other than that, they're just people. You know, it's not something scary. It's just a kid or an adult or whatever. They're just a person. It's not something to be scared about, you know? It's really not. I know it doesn't, you know, like you've said, it doesn't fit in with the whole perfect society thing that everyone's got to have going on. You know, I'm sorry that your kid's not going to be the valedictorian of Harvard, but guess what? That probably wouldn't happen even if they didn't have Down syndrome. So calm down. Let's be honest here. Your kid is not going to go on to become, you know, the CEO of a $1 billion company or to be the next Mariah Carey or whatever. Like, most children are just going to be average. Accept it. It's okay. It really is. Like, you're not growing the next prodigy. You're growing just a regular person like the rest of us. So, you know, get over it. You don't have to have a perfect kid.
And I guess that's what kind of starts to annoy me about the autism community is because in a lot of the modern media, autistics are displayed as some kind of savant. And I'm like, no, my child is not Rain Man. He cannot do math to save his life. The only thing that he has completely memorized are the names of sharks, the certain species of sharks, because that's his thing. Or he can tell you the entire Batman origin story, you know, in his sleep. Those are the things he cares about. So those are really the only the things that he's good at, and everything else is he has to work for. And yeah, so that we are constantly fighting the, oh, he must be really good at. No, he's not. This is, yeah, he is not. Now, if you want to, but that's the thing. I think we, when babies are born, we look at them and we think they have that potential. They have the potential to do anything and to be anything, but we project so much onto our children and say, you will live out all of our dreams. And one of the greatest difficulties, especially, I found with fathers in the autism community, especially, is that it's very difficult. Well, it's difficult for both parents, but it's especially difficult for fathers to accept that a child, and so many of these kids that are diagnosed are boys, because there's a higher rate of autism among boys than girls, that they have to accept that your child will not live out all of your dreams, will not run across that football field with your name on their jersey, running that touchdown for, you know, and going to college, doing the same thing or anything like that. So it's really a difficult balancing act where, you know, we are starting to see so much inclusion and so much integration in society right now where, but the difficulty is when those kids disappear, then there won't be that inclusion and that integration. And with autism, it's impossible to tell at birth. It's not something that's genetically able to test for prenatally. So it's, but my fear is that someday when that occurs, that will be the next thing to happen is that your child has tested for Fragile X and now you have an option because you know what your life will be like. You will have to, you will have, and I can see the exact same scare tactics that have been pulled on the Down syndrome community, pulled on the autism community of your child is going to be nonverbal. Your child is going to sit and scream and rock at a corner and flap their hands and do all of these things that no, a majority of kids don't really do that. That's just what the media stereotype is of autism. And that's
You know, the
kind of
difference is, though, now that I think is that this whole pursuit of perfection or being exceptional and extraordinary, no one, you know, 50 years ago, no, I don't think people really strive to be the best person on the block. You know, they were okay with, okay, well, I'm just going to go and I'm going to, you know, work at some business place like, you know, my dad did. I'm going to go be a, you know, whatever. And now it's like just being the average, you know, just a middle class person with a regular job, you know, that's not good enough for people. Yeah, they want their kids to be exceptional and extraordinary and the best at everything. They can't just be on the football team. They've got to be the star.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they can't just be in the band. They've got to be like the best guitar player that ever lived. So it's like you couple that, this whole drive to make your kid unique and extraordinary. And you even see that with the names, baby names. People inventing these absolutely insane baby names because, you know, heaven forbid, my kid isn't like everyone else. But at the same time, it's like you want your kid to be so just the best at everything. You know, heaven forbid you get a kid that is, oh my gosh, they're not going to be able to be the valedictorian. Okay, well, guess what? Most kids aren't going to be the valedictorian. That's the way it is anyway. Get over it.
Yep.
It's
we've hit an interesting point in the culture when average is a failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's that average is a failure. Mm-hmm. So when you get the news, you know, oh, well, your kid is autistic or they have Down syndrome or whatever it is. And it's like,
yeah, we know families with cerebral palsy. We know kids with epilepsy disorders. And it's through, you know, just having one disability, you get kind of a wider opening into other disabilities. And it's amazing how a lot of these parents I've known have really risen to the challenges. And some parents I've known have absolutely panicked. And sometimes you have parents that completely abdicate and then they don't do the best for their child. But that, again, that's a whole nother story. But yeah, we're in this pursuit of perfection and it scares me. It scares me because I want society to accept my child. And if society deems my child not perfect, if the government deems my child not perfect, if Obamacare deems my child not perfect, then what is that going to do in the future for other children that follow him? Because there will be. There's, you know, I'm of the line of thinking that there will not be a universal cure to autism. It's just not going to happen. There's just too many factors at play. When you can't find one cause, you can't have one solution. So we have to learn to adapt to some of these things. And I think people have now accepted that this cure to Down syndrome is simply to kill. And that it's just, and so when did a cure become a death sentence? It's like saying to anybody, well, you've got cancer, let's die. And we've just been through that recently with this poor story out of Oregon with this 29-year-old with a brain tumor who says there is no cure. I've been told there's no cure. I'm in stage 4. It's over. So I will choose my date of death.
Well, I think that what gives me a lot of,
Bless you, Wyatt.
What gives me a lot of hope is, you know, since we have such higher rates of inclusion now, children are going to grow up and they're not going to grow up the way that, you know, we did, where they weren't around people with disabilities.
Right.
So my hope is that it's not going to be scary for them when they're adults and they have children, because they're going to remember, oh, well, that's right, I had my friend that had Down syndrome, or, oh, I had a friend that was autistic, you know. It's not going to be a big deal for them. And it's like an example would be this woman that just wrote in the Daily Mail about how she aborted her child with Down syndrome because it was the kindest thing to do for her other child, her daughter, Delilah. She said it would be too much of a burden on Delilah. And I just want to be like, come to my house, lady, and see how, you know, my other two kids are with Wyatt. They love him.
Yeah, if you could just get Ivy to stop climbing on Wyatt, he'd probably be really grateful.
Yeah, so I think that I think it'll be at the very least interesting to see how these children that grow up around children with disabilities so much more than we did.
Right.
And how are they going to act when they start having children?
And that's kind of where we came in. It was, you know, once we had our first two and we have our daughter, Alexandra, and then we had James, and the idea that we would continue to have children after a diagnosis, it is so rare, because so many times when you have that happen, people just stop because they want to say, okay, well, we have this one child. We got to focus all of our attention on this one child. We had two more. And it's like, I figured all the help we can get is great. We've got, you're never going to have a tighter network than you will within your immediate family with your own siblings who have been raised with you and know you and love you. So I figured that was the best safety net we could give him in life.
Oh yeah, people have said that to me too, that, you know, after Wyatt, why would you keep having children? You know, isn't that going to be a burden on your family? And I'm just like, okay, one, no, my son is not a burden. And two, another thing that I think a lot of people don't really think about, and this isn't why we keep having kids, it's just kind of like, I guess, an extra benefit, if you put it that way. You know, Matt and I are not going to be here forever.
Right.
We're, God willing, you know, will outlive us. And right. Who's going to take care of him after we're gone? You know, not if Benjamin and Ivy don't want to, then I mean, we'll have to figure that out, right. I guess, when the time comes. But basically, the more siblings you have, the more people there are to take care of them after we're gone. The bigger their family is, the bigger their support system is,
right.
The more people there are going to be that are going to be there for them when their parents are gone. Because, you know, we all want our children to outlive us. But I mean, if you've got a kid with a disability that can't completely live 100% on their own, then what happens when you're gone?
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing. And I think that's our goal with raising all of our children, is to make them as independent as possible, but also to give them a sense that you are each other's safety net. You are family. Mm-hmm. Family does for each other what you would, you love them. So of course you're going to take care of them, sacrifice for them, do all these things. I mean, I have a almost 11-year-old who has said to me on multiple occasions, the day will come when I will care for him because you won't be able to. At 11. The idea that somebody who's going to be turning 11 this year is saying to me, there will be a day when I know I will care for him, and my siblings, my other younger siblings, will help me do it. Because that is the way that we are raising them now. The idea that you are your brother's keeper. And I think as those kids, like my daughter and like your kids and my other sons, grow up with a sibling that has a disability, it's going to change their experiences, ripple outward and start to change how people perceive people with disabilities. When, you know, her friends hear, oh, well, my brother is on the autism spectrum, and they're going, what is that like? They're asking questions. They're not judging. They want to know what it's like. And so as we change perceptions at the younger level, because we have this inclusiveness and because we have this integration, things will change.
Well, and that's the sad thing about that woman, you know, in the Daily Mail that had said, you know, oh, we had an abortion because of my daughter. You know, it would be too much of a burden for her. It wouldn't be fair to her because, you know, our baby had Down syndrome. It's like kids are not born being unaccepting or afraid of disabilities. They right. don't know that as children. It's not inherent to them. They don't just come out of the womb thinking, ooh, Down syndrome, scary.
Right.
You know, that's taught to them, and that's what she's just done to her daughter. You know, right. she's just instilled that into her daughter, that Down syndrome is something to be feared.
And
the
perfection, disability is, and perfection is something to be achieved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, aside from the fact that, you know, that girl better hope that they never get into a car accident or something, because, you know, apparently if she ends up in a wheelchair, you know, her mom might just shoot her or something, because heaven forbid.
Yeah.
But it's like, she's just, instead of, you know, raising a child that's going to be tolerant and accepting with disabilities, she has just made sure to instill in her that disabilities are bad and to be avoided, so much so that they're worth killing for.
Yeah.
That's not how I would want to raise my children. I mean, that's just me. But.
No, and that's how neither you or I have decided to raise our children. So, well, we need to wrap this up. We could spend all day talking about this cause, both dear to both of our hearts, and we'll probably touch on this again sometime in a different podcast. But I think awareness is great, but what we do with that awareness is more important. And if we use the awareness of a disability like Down syndrome or like autism to then live out our lives in such a way that makes other people say, it's not scary. And I think that that's really what awareness becomes. It becomes more of a burden on us to make people aware than, you know, the media flash of, it was October, it was Down syndrome awareness month, did you guys pay attention? No, okay, next awareness month. It's like, let's move on to the next cause du jour for, you know, this month, and then we'll get around again next year. And yeah, this is something we live every day of our lives. We don't get to just think about it for a month and then walk off. So that's going to be the challenge going forward, is to really personalize and make real our experiences so that people are constantly aware. So these things And these perceptions do get changed in society. So then when kids like James and like Wyatt grow up, there is a society that values them. Mm-hmm. So anything to add to that?
Well, just exactly what you said is that, you know, these children, their lives have value, mm-hmm. even though, you know, hey, they may not be the quarterback on the football team. That doesn't mean their lives are any less valuable.
Right. All right. I think we're going to have to wrap this one up. I think we've talked over our limit. That's okay. All right. I want to thank Cassie Fiano for joining me today for our Victory Girls podcast and for continuing news coverage, editorial coverage, and just all around cool stuff. Make sure you check out our blog at victorygirlsblog.com. Thank you for listening today, and we hope to hear you again next time.